Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from
sobriety. Okay, now this mic is working. Ugh. I hate the people who use the station before we do. They leave the settings just
not the way you like them.
Just not the way that they need to be. I don't even know if people heard the intro. Let me try that again.
Try it again.
And now it's time for Homegrown. Let me bring the music back up. We'll just restart this show and pretend that we had to.
Every day I'm moving further from
little show music.
Further from sobriety. So sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. With your host, me, Clinton. Because I'm the only host that's here today. My other host, they abandoned me. They let me go.
Yeah, but we got quality instead of quantity.
Quality instead of quantity. Here we go. So just in case there are people out there, so I guess because we usually start with some type of banter between our hosts, some type of political thing. And so, you know, maybe I should bring back the Trump-Pence report. People have been talking about the memo a lot. That's been the most recent thing. And I don't know if anyone's been confused about it. I certainly was confused about it when it first started. But I figured out a way to make it make sense to me, usually in terms of governmental relations, governmentarian relations. I usually have to use the elementary school playground motif in order to make sense of things. For this, it's complex enough that I think I have to move it up to middle school. To middle school. So imagine, if you will, that you've got a mean girl, just a horrible, hideous mean girl, and she's just bullying everybody. And so one of the girls that she's bullying, let's say Latwanda said is not going to have it anymore and goes to the teachers and says Donatella is bullying everybody, and so the teachers have their eye on Donatella, and so Donatella goes to one of her little minions, one of her little cliquettes, Devin. And Devin writes a little note that she passes Donatella in class, right? And the note says something like, OMG, I can't believe Latwanda is talking about you being a bully when everyone knows that she's like the biggest bully of all and just bullies everyone. If the teachers really cared about us, they would be looking at Latwanda because she's just the biggest bully. She's such a B*TCH. All right, so Devin's got this note. She passes it to Donatella in the class. And in the middle of the pass, Donatella says, oh, teacher, Devin's passing me a note. Please don't look at it. Well, maybe you should look at it because it's the worst note ever. It's a horrible note. It's a hideous. Maybe you don't want to read it because it's just too bad. But maybe you do want to read it because it's so bad. But maybe you're not prepared to read this note because it's so bad. Oh, here, read the note. And then Donatella's little Twitter followers get on her other clickmates and say, this note is the worst note ever. This is worse than when we passed the note saying that Janine gave a B*J to Johnny Blue underneath the bleachers during the last football game. This note, worse than Watergate. And I think that's exactly what's going on.
It's good. Kind of like Heather's.
Kind of like Heather's, but with nuclear codes floating around in the background.
Oops.
So there's your explanation.
Thank you,
current
Clinton,
events
I
for you
feel
today.
So much better now.
Do you? Mm-hmm. All right, good. I feel great because I'm here with one of my favorite people in the world, Linda Zuby, actor, director, performer, just all around theater producer person.
You're making me snort, Clinton.
How you doing, Linda?
I'm good. I'm good. Revving up my show out at Fort County Players.
Excellent. Thank you for coming once again on Homegrown. Tell us about this show at Fort County Players.
So
your sold out show.
Yeah, we're sold out already. How that happened? Well, first of all, it's for part of a series called Songs in the Cellar, mm-hmm. which you and I have both performed in the cellar before. And it's a small, very small, intimate space. And
for those people who don't know, Fort County Players, up in Barbersville.
Yep.
It's in a former one-room schoolhouse.
Yep.
Most darling space.
Real wood.
I think for theater. Yeah, yeah. It's such a great space. It's such a warm space. And a few years ago, they renovated their basement, their yep. cellar, and made it a smaller little sort of lab theater, smaller play space.
Yep.
And that's the cellar. That's where
we're singing this weekend. So anyway, I'm a little bit older these days, and you start thinking about, yeah, seriously. And you start aging out of roles that you would like to do, you know?
I don't know what that's like at all.
Yeah, I know, Clinton. But anyway, being a woman of a certain age, and there's less roles available.
True enough.
Less roles available. And so...
Not enough roles to start with.
Yeah, indeed. Totally. You know, mother of the bride... sister, aunt, yeah, right. All those things. But anyway, so I just kind of got this little nut in my brain, and I came up with the title, A View from Some Broads, just because I thought I was just being so clever.
Nice one.
Yeah, yeah. And then over the last 2 years, I've just started, like, you jot down a song title. You jot down. So I had all these little scraps of paper and stuff, and then Fort County Programming Committee kind of called me on it and said, hey, and so I'm doing A View from the Broads this weekend, and it's all women singing about what it's like to be abroad.
That's great. So are all these songs show tunes? Are they all from?
They ended up being all show tunes. I had a whole kinds of different ideas about that, but the story that it kind of popped up, it's all show tunes, but I did pick, I have a lot of pre-show music and intermission music that's more pop, so we have at least a little bit of that flavor in there, even though my broads aren't singing it, that at least it's going to be in the space and in the environment. So
you say, what you're saying is that you couldn't do the show without throwing some Beyonce in somewhere.
So did I pick a Beyonce?
Oh, you had to have.
Well, there's not one in my show list.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so sorry. I had to think about it. There's
still time.
So many songs to choose from. So little time.
Still time.
I got Aretha in there.
Aretha's great, but,
all
you know.
All right, there you go.
I'm older,
Clinton.
You want to bring the youth in.
So well, I
you want to bring the youth
I
in.
I have fun there. Fun's in there. Iz is in there doing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I have a very eclectic music taste. We'll just put it that way.
Okay.
And they are reflected in the music.
So this is a musical review.
It is indeed.
Right. So talk about the musical review, because it's a different type of beast.
It is a different type of beast. And when I was originally thinking about this show, I was actually thinking about maybe little snippets of poems or monologues and stuff, just to weave this whole story about, you know, here's what it's like being a woman in during this day and age. And the monologues started to bog it down. And so it became just a musical review. And as I started putting things together, there were a couple things that came into play. It's like, first of all, I didn't know who I was going to get.
Right.
So I could have had a song list, and it might have not synced up with who auditioned and got cast. So I just kind of had a general idea, and I could have been all like, oh, woe is me. Mm. Oh, my broken heart.
Right.
Oh, I love my man. Oh, my man hates me.
Right.
I mean, it could have been, and
oh,
men
I
are
lost
stupid.
My man.
Yeah, and it could have been that. And that didn't sound very enticing to me, and it's always such a small part of everybody's life, you know. There's all so many other things that go on in somebody's life. So it kind of turned out to be more of a journey from, here's some of the things that happened in my youth, and oh, here's me growing up, and oh, reality smacking me in the face a little bit, but I'm going to grab the bull by the horns and go for it. And
that's nice. That's
so
nice.
It's more about a journey, more so about man bashing. That's where it went. And then it luckily, the nine women that I have all kind of clicked in with the songs I'd chosen. And I tweaked it a little bit once I got cast, added this, you know, took away a little bit of that, and poof, Now we have a show. Great.
So your musical director, Erica.
Erica Umbach, yes, Erica Umbach.
How was she with that level of flexibility, that level of well, okay, I told you this, but now let's take this out. Can we do this?
She totally was awesome working with me, and she totally understood, too. It's like, you know, we might have picked a song, and we looked at the nine women we cast and went, I don't think anybody can do that song. But it didn't happen, but she totally was involved. So I gave her and my, I have a wing broad on this. My friend Lori was kind of my counsel and sounding board through the development of the show. And we just kept it really flexible. And she was totally on board with making sure we had the right people and the right songs telling the story. So luckily it didn't shift that much from when we kind of had the general idea together to when we cast it. So
yeah. How great is that to be able to mold the piece so specifically to the people that you've got? I mean,
it's a nice little perk. I mean, as you know, you directed. And so it's one of those things where sometimes you don't get that opportunity.
I mean, that's
so you're kind of like forcing that square peg into that round hole.
A lot of what we're used to is, okay, here's the piece. This is what it is. And we just sort of cast the nets out, cross our fingers.
And hope,
and hope that we get what we need.
And then have people contort into the parts. Exactly.
Able to say, okay, this is this person's strength, let's play to that. And this is this person's strength, let's play to that. And
yeah, it doesn't happen very often. It was very nice. And luckily, I really, really got a great bunch of women that some have a lot of musical education and some don't, but they all are really top notch in their presentation of the music and everything. So it's been great. And it's been fun watching them grow into the places that I put them. So it's been great.
It's interesting that you talk about finding a through line through it, because I was thinking this morning about the musical review as a beast, as a creature, and how you do it and how you attack it. And I was thinking, how much it was kind of like, not kind of, how much it was like cabaret. Not the show cabaret, but the style
cabaret. The style, yeah, it very much is, yeah.
And it seems almost like a cabaret on steroids, just like a bigger cabaret. Like usually, and for people who don't know, cabaret, it's we've talked about it on the show before, that it's not something you see a lot of in Charlottesville.
No,
I think Doug Schneider has done some, Marty Rowan,
when she was still in town, tried to get some cabaret things going. Yeah,
right. So yeah, cabaret is usually one to maybe four or five people. I mean, I think I've seen one that's like five people, and you find it usually in big cities. And it's usually done in a bar or a nightclub.
Jazz clubs, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a collection of songs at its basis. But the most interesting cabarets that I've seen have some type of theme, some type of overall arching thing that connects the songs. Most commonly, it's I'm so and so and so and so. I've been doing Broadway for this many years, and we're going to do all those songs. Like, I'm Liza Minnelli.
We're
going to do my hits.
Yeah.
And that's the theme. But, you know, like one of a cabaret that I saw once, they were all songs connected with the sky and with the stars. And it was called Star Heavens Above, I think. And it was all great. It's interesting. Musical review. Very similar to that, right?
I would totally say that. And previous songs in the Cellar shows, we've done like, here's Broadway shows from the 80s. Mm-hmm. And we did a like backwards Broadway where men sang women's songs and women sang men's songs. So there's been all these little things, a theme loosely or, you know, whatever. So, and this, it just, the growth and the journey thing just kind of happened once I started looking at all the songs that were coming to mind, what the women auditioned with. I really looked at what the auditioners did, because I was like, these people have a really personal relationship with the song. Does it work with this little journey thing that's kind of developed? And some of them did. Some of them did plug in with that. Uh-huh. And one thing at the auditions that we had them do, because as you know, when you're just standing there singing, not in the guise of a character, right. It can be pretty daunting. It's just you out there singing. And we said, here, give me three songs that mean something to you. Mm-hmm. Be prepared to sing one of them. And be prepared to tell me why you picked that song.
Oh, interesting.
And so it was kind of interesting to hear why certain auditions.
And this was during the audition.
This is during the audition. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was some incredible stories told and really personal stuff shared. So then it gave me a little hint about their personality and about how comfortable they were just being themselves naked on the stage. So that was really cool.
Did you have a set cast number that you were casting for?
I was looking for 7 to 9 is what my thought was. And I thought if I get 7 strong ones, great. If I get 9, even better. Because what's nice about this is a little series that someone who can't dedicate themselves to like an 8-week rehearsal period followed by a 3 or 4 week run. I mean, that's a big commitment, and some people just don't have the time or the bandwidth to do that kind of thing. So this is a kind of nice, oh good, I can still perform, but I'm not killing myself or, you know, neglecting my family or whatever. So this is, so 9 women was great, because that way nobody's shouldering too much of the responsibility. It's more evenly divided.
Right. And I bet that, so are all the songs solos or are?
No, there's solos, some duets, there's some group numbers. I'll give a little bit away. We're starting the show with, it's not really a Broadway song, but it's been included in Broadway songs. It's a Noel Coward song called Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage. So it's a little tongue-in-cheek to have 9 women trot out to sing Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage. It's kind of a vaudeville kind of music hall song, but it's wonderful, and it kind of...
Well, yeah, it's Noel Coward,
it's Noel Coward.
It's
just very like, cheeky.
It's like putting Noel Coward and Cole Porter in the same room. It's just witty songs galore.
Yeah. So that's where we start. So.
All right. I think we'll have to take a moment and do a drop right now, and then be right back with Linda Zuby from 4 County Players here on 94.7 WPVC. This is Homegrown. 19 minutes past the hour, you listen to Homegrown, your show about local art. And I'm sitting here with Linda Zuby.
Yay.
Hello, Linda.
Hi, Quentin.
4 County Players talking about their upcoming musical review, A View from Some Broads.
Broads.
Sold out.
I know. I was like surprised. I expected it to. I mean, because it's a small space and it's only 3 nights, and I expected it to get sold out, but it sold out early.
Yeah, it sold out before the show started, which is becoming a thing. I mean, good for 4 County Players. It's becoming a thing for 4 County to be selling out stuff.
We've had a good season. Evidently we've picked the right things for the right time. So yeah, so it's nice to know that people want to come out. See us out there.
Cool.
In the country.
So, if you're listening to this, here are some tips for sold out shows. Now, just because something's sold out doesn't mean that you have no chance of seeing
this. Is true.
So, especially here in Charlottesville, I don't know about other places, but here in Charlottesville, if something is sold out, you should go anyway. You should go early. And see if they're taking a list, because frequently what will happen is you'll go early, and they'll say, well, it's sold out, and you'll say, are you taking keeping a list of standbys? Because sometimes people don't come.
People don't show. Exactly. It happens. Almost
every show, right?
I would say that, yeah, because actually...
Especially in big shows. I don't know about in the small shows like The Cellar, but good.
So, no, it's very true. And in the smaller shows, in the smaller spaces, when 2 people don't show up, it's huge. When you've only got 60 people sitting there and maybe 2 or 4 people don't come, it's like this huge gap. And you, as a performer, you're like, huh?
Right.
And you knew that... Joe Smith and his wife wanted to come, and they could have come, but it, so yeah. So, and I think for this case, box office is already got little waiting lists going for the show, which is nice.
Yeah, I remember doing a show down in the Cellar once where it was sold out, and I think an entire family just didn't make, so like 4 to 6 people didn't show up because they couldn't make it for whatever reason.
For whatever reason,
and
yeah.
So they were like, this is huge. bank of seats.
It's a gap, and like, you're like, right, where? There.
Yeah. Like, you could have come in. We could have put people in those seats.
We could have used them. Yeah, exactly. Happens all over.
So talk about the challenge of doing a musical review. I mean, what's the what kind of challenges do you have? You directed musicals before?
Well, Gary Warwick White and I co-directed Great American Trailer Park Musical.
Oh, yeah.
But it's already, that's
talk about a sold out one. I so wanted to see that. I so wanted to see that, and I just missed it.
It
killed it. As you can tell, it kills me to this day because it sounded really interesting.
It's way silly. Trailer Park was way silly, but it's like we were talking about before. It's a little bit different when you've got this. Okay, here's the show. Here's the script. Here's the songs. Find the right people and go.
Right.
And with a review, there are reviews out there that you can tap into. But when you're creating one, it's been a 2-year process for me to just get my head wrapped around it and read this and listen to that and build the story and figure out, oh, no, I don't want to go down that road. That's just a downer. Oh, this is more positive. This is more, yeah, let's go this way. And it takes a while and a lot of thinking and a lot of consulting your favorite sounding boards about, so right. If I did this, so yeah, so it's interesting. And like I was saying before, once you get your players, once you get your folks, oh, did what I choose, does this work for this group of people? And I've been lucky in that respect, and that it kind of all started to work together.
How does it feel to have such an authorial role?
I don't sleep much, Clinton. No, as you know, I mean, when the buck stops with you, you're worried about everything. You're worried about the paint on the floor. You're worried about making sure the light cues are written correctly into the light board. I mean, everything comes under your purview. Even like, you know, every theater space gets a little trashed during a rehearsal period, you know, and there's, right, right. you know, and so cleaning up the the concessions area, you know, all those things, you can't help but think about and worry about it and make sure you're taking care of it. And when we're doing a show in the cellar, especially the reviews, the director does take a major role making sure all the
right
the buttons are buttoned, the zippers are zipped, and everything's done. So in that case, yeah, losing a little sleep here and there, but my broads have been awesome, so they've worked hard.
I've got a couple questions. But you just mentioned the broad, so we'll go down that avenue first. What kind of variety have you found in them? Do you have performers from different ages? Do you have performers from
I do.
Ages?
I have. It ended
and
up.
Were you looking for that at the
top? I wanted all women of a certain age, and then I decided to leave that kind of open. And if someone felt like they were abroad and of a certain age, not didn't matter what age they were.
Oh yeah, because I remember I was talking to when the season was first announced, we had Gary in here.
Yeah.
No, we had Edward. We had Edward in here, and I think he described it as that, as women of a certain age, and I think that's probably earlier in the process.
So yeah, it was, and so I just decided whoever wants to audition, if they felt they wanted to audition, please come audition. So I ended up with I think my youngest is in her 30s and the oldest is in her 60s, and so it's just a nice blend of people, and some have a lot of musical experience and some not so much. And one of our newbies, my rookie broad, we've all named her, we all have broad names, my rookie broad has had a lot of singing experience with like Virginia Consort and stuff, but not so much in musicals. And so it's been kind of fun watching her grow and tackle just being herself out there singing. That's been great. Yeah, so it's been fun. It's been fun having some new people on board, too, to dovetail in with some of us. And even a good friend of mine, actually, who's moved to Richmond, is actually doing the show. So,
oh, really?
Boomerang Broad is...
So has she been coming in from Richmond?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know Kristen Heiderstadt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kristen! She's broad.
Yeah, yeah. She's great.
So, yeah. So it's been nice having her back in the fold, and just it's been really great. And I was afraid, you know, when you get a whole bunch of women together, you're not always sure if there's going to be some headbutting or diva action or whatever. Right. But it's been awesome. It's been a really great copacetic group of women. It's been fun.
So this past year has kind of felt like Year of the Woman this past year. I mean, now that we're, you know, surfing the fall of the Weinstein wave.
Yeah.
And you know, the resultant Me Too movement, or not the result, because Me Too was going before that, but also the Time's Up movement, which is going on in big, yeah, big professional things. Did any of that, that feeling find its way into what you guys were doing, or was this sort of a separate thing?
I would say, well, as you know, we pick theater seasons, it's almost like a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So we had decided to do this show more than a year ago.
Right.
So I don't know if it directly influenced.
Which is one of those wonderful moments of like just...
Serendipity.
Serendipity.
Yeah, totally serendipity.
Thank you. That's the word serendipitous.
So I read it in your eyes, Clinton. I think that's kind of the reason, all this stuff is kind of the reason why I went down the more positive route.
Because
mm-hmm. we're all getting just 2x4s up the side of the head, left and right, with all this stuff, and it's frightening and maddening, and just, if you want to come and just gnash your teeth, that's great. But I think that I've kind of really felt strongly about making it a more positive, uplifting evening of music, because we kind of need that right now.
Mm.
Really do. I mean, we just came off doing Christmas Story out at Fort County Players.
Right.
You're basic, all-American, you know.
You got to put your eye out.
You got to put your eye out. And it sold out. And I took notice of that. And I think it's because I just want to go enjoy myself at the theater. I just want to go someplace and have a good time.
Yeah.
I don't want to see anybody beat up. I don't want to see violence. I don't want, you know, I just want to go have a nice time. And so I think that's kind of why I ended up with my final story arc the way it's kind of gotten put together, that it's more positive than not.
Well, I envy all of the already ticket holders out there. For those of you who do not have tickets, I am in your place. And I will be taking my own advice, I think, and trying to sneak in to see a show if I can. Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show. Please give the people the what, where, when, and why for this show.
I will. Fort County Players out there in Barbersville, February 9th, 10th, and 11th. Songs in the Cellar. Three nights only. Very special. And you could give us a call out there. Of course, I don't have the phone number at my fingertips. Or you can go online. Just email our box office gal and get on a waiting list for one of the nights.
There we go. Linda Zuby, thank you so much.
Clintonian. Bye.
Bye. All right. 30 minutes past the hour. Could you invite our next guest to come in while I
do
the read-through of what's going down? All right. And when we do the preview, we usually do a little musica. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Coming up this week, currently running from February 20 to February 23rd, local artist Aaron Eichwort's exhibit, The Back Room, at Second Street Gallery. Also currently running from February to February 27th, Tuesdays from 6 to 8:15 p.m. Join instructor Jane Friedman for Social Media Lab Writers Crafting a Strategy and a Presence That Fits with Your Writing Career. Offered by the Charlottesville Writer House, but meeting at Indoor Biotechnologies. Also currently running until March 8th, Tuesdays from 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Join instructor Kristen Rembold as she looks at pattern and form in poetry at the Charlottesville Writer House. Currently running until April 8th, the Actors Renaissance Season at the American Shakespeare Center. They're presenting Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, Congreve's The Way of the World, John Marston's Antonio's Revenge, and Hamlet and Richard II by Shakespeare. I just saw Hamlet the other day. All at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. The Stanton. Currently running until February 24th, Top Girls at Live Arts. If you want to hear about that, go to SeavillePodcast.com. check out Homegrown. We interviewed the Betsy Tucker, the director, and some of the cast last week. Today, the father and daughter Valentine dance at the Charlottesville Ballet Studio Theater. February 6th, Winston Hodges and Chris Allen lead the Anti-Up Comedy Host Battle Edition at the Anteroom. You can go to SeaVillePodcast.com. We interviewed Chris and Winston about that a couple months ago. February 7th, Jefferson Madison Regional Children's Librarian Glynis Welt from the Gordon Avenue branch comes to UBA's Fralin Art Museum for Pictures and Pages, where she uses movement songs and even puppets to connect kids to art. February 8th, One Night Stand presents Up and Coming Poetry. One Mic Stand presents Up and Coming Poetry, Comedy, Satire, and Storytelling at Piedmont Virginia's Community College at the Vielor Dickinson Building at PVCC. February 9th equals Beloved Community Charlottesville presenting a showing of New York documentary I'm Not Racist, Am I? At the Paramount Theater. That's the New York City documentary I'm Not Racist, Am I? At the Paramount Theater. I think that's the way you should pronounce it. February 9th to 11th, UVA Spanish Theater Group presents the Argentinian play Las Putas de San Julian, an account of the Argentinian army's brutal repression of a rural worker strike from 1920 to 1922, February 9th to February 10th, Upfront, Evening of Romance, Romantic Duets, plus newly commissioned works by the Charlottesville Ballet at their studio theater. On February 10th, check out Lisa Ellison and Deborah Prum leading The Gifts of Grief, a retreat on writing through your loss by the Charlottesville Writer House. Also on February 10th, UVA Fralin Art Museum docent and former guest June Heintz guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fralin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour. And on February 17th, Bob Friedman leads the writer seminar Publishing Options, Pros and Cons, looking at the advantages and disadvantages of self-publishing. And for your musical options this week, today, Berto Sales and Miles Pierce at the Glasshouse Winery at 2 p.m. Tonight, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Tomorrow, the Telemetry Music Series continues at the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative, featuring HMN, Molasses, and Kevin Davis. Tomorrow, ATM Unit with Jonah Kane West at Rapture. February 7th, LG and Friends of the Whiskey Jar. Sammy Horn takes the 10-finger dance across the ivories at Fellini's. On February 8th, Nick and Steve Pollock at Dirty Nelly's and the Michael Ellswick Gathering, and then the Tyler Dick Band at Fellini's. At February 9th, former guest Chloe Esther plays the Space Lab. Red and the Romantics are at the Whiskey Jar. And check this out for February 9th. Travis Elliott, Daryl Mueller, John Dirth, and more join together for the Seaville tribute to Rick Hall's Muscle Shoals Sound at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. That sounds exciting. Also on February 9th, Mojo Pie at Fellini's. February 10th, we got Rattlebag, Wild Wolf Brewery, Duo Boheme at the Wegmans Food Market, Lua at Star Hill Brewery Tap Room, Ann Lara at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, The Pollocks at the Batesville Market, No Scrubs 90s Dance Party at the Jefferson Theater, and the UBA Jazz Ensemble at Old Cabell Hall. Every Friday morning, of course, it's the West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the French Porch Roots Music School. Also, Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, having their weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else? Every Monday, the Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Also, every Tuesday, the Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. And every Wednesday, Open Mic Night at Brewery and Auto Farm Brewery. Bam! Open Mic Night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo. Bam! Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9. Bam! Bachata Fusion at the Anteroom, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club. Bam! DG and Friends at the Bebedero. Bam! And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Ooh. Every Thursday, of course, it's Lua at the Bebedero. And every Thursday, if you still got some gas and you gotta let it pass, check out the John Dirth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dirth. And those are just some of our wonderful artistic events in our wonderful artistic town.
Hi, I'm Angus Carter, artist out of Stanton, Virginia, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
36 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Their guest today is journalist Jordy Yeager. He's going to be talking about the gentrification of the 10th and Page neighborhood. Bye-bye, black people. But before we get to that, we're going to turn to our next guest. I think I just surprised. Sorry about that, Gabe.
No, it's great.
Gabe Gavin here from Positive Collective. Good morning, Gabe.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming here. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. A little nervous. Microphones make me nervous. Am I in the zone of appreciation?
Why don't you tip the mic up just a little bit? There you go. Microphone shouldn't make you nervous. You're in a band.
Yeah, I don't sing in the band.
You're the bassist, right?
That's right.
Holding it down.
Yeah.
You know, so I watched this show once. I think it was Elton John and Elvis Costello produced the show that Elvis Costello hosted, where basically Costello was interviewing his musician friends. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. It's really good to see this guy who's an experienced musician really asking some questions.
Right.
And he did, the Police were doing a reunion tour.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how famously acrimonious relations between the three members of the Police are. And he did the smartest interview that I've seen, the smartest structured interview. He interviewed all of them separately, mm-hmm. and then interviewed them together.
Cool.
And there was this one moment when he's talking to Sting, and Sting was saying, yeah, well, you know, playing bass, it's a really cool thing. I mean, it's an interesting position from which you can control the band. And I'm like, oh, now I see.
Yeah, and I read Sting's autobiography, and he said that some of his bass lines were really simplistic in order to allow him to sing. But I'm always amazed at bass players who can sing. Because I cannot. I've tried. And usually when I do, the bass line falters, so I just stick to the bass.
I'm impressed with anyone who, you know, performs and sings.
Yeah.
That's because, especially like doing intricate stuff and then singing, it's just, yeah. Yeah,
because yeah,
I take some guitar lessons from Peyton Tochterman, guitar teacher extraordinaire, who by the way is taking new students now.
nice plan.
Contact Peyton Tochterman. and every once in a while, like, oh yeah, I want to play this song, and I'll sit down and do it, and it'll be something like Stevie Wonder's Superstition. It's like, okay. Like, it's really rhythmically complex. And the vocals sometimes have different rhythmic lines than what you're playing.
Exactly.
And so I found myself having to learn what I was playing and then learn what was singing and then learn how to do both of them together at the same time. It's like, what the?
Yeah, it's like, it feels like you're having to use different parts of your brain.
Right.
And that's what happens with the bass. The bass line is almost always rhythmically different from what's happening vocally. And, I haven't been able to bridge the divide. But we have anywhere from seven to eight people in the band, so there's plenty of people to sing. I can just focus on locking down the bass.
There you go. So, Positive Collective, you guys are part of an upcoming show. What are you guys doing? Talk about it.
So, this is February 9th at the Ante Room. It's called the Mighty Marley Celebration. February 6th is Bob Marley's birthday. So, it's
73rd, I think?
I don't know.
I think I read that on the Ante Room website. I think that's like he would have been 73, maybe?
Wow. I'm not sure.
Something like that?
I think he died when he was 36, and he was in the 80s. So, yeah, I guess we'd be getting to that point. And I think this is maybe going to be one of the last shows at the Ante Room. I think there's some changes going on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I hope it's all right to say that.
Wow.
I think that's public knowledge. Positive Collective is going to be opening up for Mighty Joshua and the Zion 5.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So, third annual Mighty Marley celebration. Were you guys part of the previous two?
No, we played there once with Mighty Joshua with the Guano Boys, but I don't think it was for Marley celebration. Mm-hmm. So this will be the first one with Positive Collective and Mighty Joshua teaming up.
So are you guys going to be doing only Marley stuff, or are you going to be doing general reggae? How are you approaching that?
We're going to do both. We're going to do some Marley tunes that we haven't done before, so mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. But we're also going to do some original music, and we're definitely reggae focused and reggae inspired, but we branch out into some different genres. Have a little Latin flavor, a little world beat, a little bit of jam.
So it's I don't know if it's still the case, but when I was growing up, or when I was around college age, it seemed like everybody had one of the CDs that everybody had was, you know, Legend, best mm-hmm. you know, the best hits of Bob Marley,
right.
And it was just like everyone's heard that.
Right.
I think less people have heard other stuff. I think just the rest of his career is like a deep cut, and I think a lot of people don't know that he's got. I mean, there's a huge catalog of Marley stuff that isn't just those hits, right?
Oh yeah, and I love the more obscure stuff. Yeah, he's just got so many amazing songs, and so much of it is just so spiritually and politically revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
It's super inspiring and musically just amazing. So yeah, I mean, Legend is a classic, but I love to listen to the stuff that's, you know, more obscure.
Do you like, what do you think about his earlier stuff? Cause I've heard some of his earlier stuff with the Wailers, and it doesn't sound like a lot of the classic ones that we're used to.
Yeah, some of the earlier stuff actually predates reggae itself.
Right.
And some of that stuff is, I don't love.
Mm-hmm.
but I do like listening to the evolution of it, because there is a very interesting growth. Like a lot of that music was inspired from music they were hearing of R&B. They were picking up radio stations out of Florida and then doing their take on R&B. And then it developed into, you know, they started to learn about Rasta and get more politically revolutionary. And then they changed the music and created this new original music. And that's really what speaks to me, is what came about from the, I guess, spiritual growth and evolution.
So talk about reggae, and talk about what makes reggae reggae, because I remember watching, of all things, a British cop show mm-hmm. once, and one of the suspects was, because, you know, reggae really big in Britain, and of course this show was in the 80s, and it was really, really big mm-hmm. in Britain in the 80s. In fact, there was one... talking about all the things, I was listening to Boy George, of all people, in an interview, saying, you know, different people have different tastes, and that's fine, but, you know, like, there's some people who talk about how they don't like reggae, and, you know, that's okay, they're wrong, but...
I love that. You know, I love the culture club. You can hear some roots in
yeah,
culture
and he was talking about how he'd grown up with reggae, and how he loved reggae, and it was after that interview, I listened to Culture Club, and you can hear it infused in there, and so much of it.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so this British cop show from the 80s, there, one of the suspects was this guy who played bass in a reggae band, and he's like, bass is the heart. Bass is the floor. Like, bass is it. Like, it is reggae. What do you talk about the bass in reggae, and talk about what makes reggae reggae.
Yeah, so bass is clearly the backbone in reggae music. I mean, at a deeper level, you know, I think reggae evolved from Nyabingi drumming, which is a heartbeat rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they incorporated instruments, like the guitar is like offset to the drum beat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of a defining characteristic, is that rhythm guitar that doesn't play on top of the drum beat, it's almost like a call and response. So there's, you know, there'll be a drum beat and then a skank on the guitar.
That's a doo-doo, ting, doo-doo, ting,
yeah, exactly. Ting, the chink.
Yeah.
Chink. Chink. And then there's something called the one drop. And so with the one drop, it's a beat on the third beat. And so, you know, you've got the rhythm guitar happening on the second and fourth beats, and then the drums drop in on the third beat. And it just makes a different feel from anything that we're used to. Most of the music we listen to is downbeat oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more backbeat or offbeat oriented.
Yeah.
And then the bass just kind of, you know, pulls the melody and the rhythm together, and reggae bass lines are often very melodic.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time that it's got a really powerful groove and rhythm, it often has a really melodic element too.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. Would you say that, because it seems to me like a lot of rock bass lines are percussive.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly tone in there, and they keep the root structure of the changes.
Mm-hmm.
But also a lot of the effect from them is what they add to the beat. That's why it seems like they're included in the quote in the traditional rhythm section.
Right.
But R&B, you get a lot more R&B, and getting into jazz, you get a lot more melodic melody from bass lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of times, like with rock, like you said, it's maintaining the root. A lot of times they might just be pounding out the root note, you know, doing 16th notes or something. And so, you know, reggae bass will capture that root too, but yeah, there'll just be other flavors, other tones, arpeggiating triads, throwing in the third and the fifth notes of the scale, and also a lot of space too. A lot of times with especially early rootsy bass lines, you might not even land on the first beat.
Mm-hmm.
The bass line might come in after, and there's just space, and that's some of the magic of reggae too, is how much space there can be.
Oh, interesting.
And I heard something recently, and I don't remember it exactly, but it was sort of saying like the magic that you find in music is what happens between the notes.
I like that.
So yeah, maintaining that element of space is part of the power.
All right. On that, we'll take a brief break and pay some bills. Be right back here with Gabe Gavin. This is Homegrown, your only show about local art. Oh, wait a minute. Why am I saying that when we've got someone else that can say that? 50 minutes past the hour, you listen to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. If you're just joining us, here with Gabe Gavin. Oh, but I should also say that stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday Morning Waco Call with your host, Rick Moore. His guest today is journalist Jordy Yeager, talking about his article on gentrification in the 10th and Page neighborhood, the place that you're too scared to go to. Oh, God. Who says these things? All right, we're here with Gabe Gavin from Positive Collective. We've got some music from you guys.
Yeah, you going?
Yeah, you want to jump right into it? You want to set it up?
Yeah, sure. Well, this is one called Macho Banana. It's a friend of mine in Colorado actually wrote the bass line, but said we could use it, and so we just took off with it as a band and added our personal touch and flavor.
Excellent. Macho Banana by Positive Collective here on Homegrown. Macho Banana by Positive Collective. 55 minutes past the hour here on 94.7 WPVC. That's cool.
Cool, thank you.
I see what you mean by a more melodic bass line. That was just like, and that the in fact, it seems like the bass line in that is really, I mean, that is that's the melodic phrase that kind of carries the song.
Yeah, it is kind of defining the song and driving it for sure. And at the same time, it's also very redundant. So it's just sort of like this canvas that people can do all kinds of different things on. We get a little psychedelic with it sometimes.
Cool. So can you talk about what Bob Marley has meant to Positive Collective? Like, why did Positive? I mean, did the Ante Room come to you guys? What was it that made you guys say, no, this we want to be a part of?
I mean, I think we all have been influenced greatly by Bob Marley. He was certainly my first introduction to reggae music. Babylon by Bus was an album that someone gave me in high school, and once I got it, that was all I listened to for months. and I think that's probably true for most of the band, that once they discovered Bob, it resonated something deep. Daryl Rose, of course, toured with the Wailers after Bob had died, but I mean, he knows and has lived the music, and
yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, it's amazing. And Greg Ward and Chris Leva, you know, both are incredible singer-songwriters and have been inspired certainly by Bob and do covers of his. So
does Daryl ever peel one off? Like, does Daryl ever every once in a while just say, you know, back when I was with the Wailers, does he ever just let that drop?
Yeah, he'll talk about his travels. Yeah, you kind of got to draw him out. I wish he had been here today. That would have been awesome, actually. You could have maybe pulled the story out of him.
We had him on to talk about his paintings once a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And he was great. It's always wonderful to be around.
Yeah, he's a beautiful brother. So, you know, I personally always want to play some sort of tribute every year around February 6th. I think it should be a standing thing. This year it just happened that Mighty Joshua reached out to us and invited us to be a part of it. So we were thrilled.
Cool.
And Mighty Joshua, I don't know if you've ever seen or heard them, but they
I haven't seen them.
They're an amazing band. Joshua's an awesome singer. He's got a beautiful backup singer. Super talented band. It's going to be a good night. Yeah, I hope you can make it.
Excellent. So, Gabe, thanks so much for coming on Homegrown.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So it's Positive Collective and Mighty Joshua, the third annual Mighty Marley celebration at the Ante Room, February 9th.
Yeah, starting at 9, I think doors opening at 8:30.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
58 minutes past the hour. You know what? I'm going to throw on some Macho Banana as we head out. And there you go. 58. Whoops. There we go. That's the right button. I've done this before. All right. That's it. We'd like to thank our guests, Linda Zuby from Ford County and Gabe Gavin from Positive Collective. This has been Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local arts. Any complaints, of course, about what's going on with Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine firm of Tochterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services like a song. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is from Lua. And this, of course, is Positive Collective playing behind us right now. Coming up next, Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Our guest is going to be journalist Jordy Yeager, talking about the gentrification of the 10th and Page neighborhood. And it's a previously recorded show, so you can try calling in, but that's not going to help you all that much. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.